morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the June 16th, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being provided telephonically for participation by the general public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the participants participating from the staff and outside to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This meeting is being held in person with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. Today's agenda and related documents and information are available on the RI Housing website. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Vice Chairman James Thorson will preside at today's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, please state your name. And with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, I turn it back to you to call the meeting to order.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson, and I would like to call the meeting to order. And the time is approximately 9:32. Carol, can you please conduct a roll call of attendance of the Board of Commissioners in attendance and housing staff?
Sure. Commissioner James Thorson.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
Commissioner Kevin Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Stephen McAllister.
Here.
You have a quorum, Director.
Thank you, Carol. And with that, I'd like to introduce board action number one, which is the approval of the minutes of the board meeting held on May 19th, 2022. Can I have a motion, please, to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve. This is Steve.
Steve, do I have a second?
Leanne, I second.
Thank you, Leanne. Corinne, would you please conduct a voice vote on the motion?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on May 19th, 2022, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, and it's time for the presiding commissioner's remark. That would be me. And I just want to, first of all, thank the staff for arranging this meeting. It's a marathon meeting today, so I'll keep my remarks very limited here. We've got 19 items on our agenda. I also want to thank the people who are interested in our audience, the members of the public, several of whom I recognize. Thank you for coming and for your continuing interest in housing matters related to the state. This is the time of year when we all grit our teeth and push through the final days of the session. So we're trying to keep our eye on the ball and keep our business moving forward. Business is quite robust, and so we're going to have that evidenced by a very lengthy agenda. So with that, buckle up because it's going to be a meeting here. So, again, thank you. And with that, what I'd like to do is have Carol present the Executive Director's report of recent activities and trends.
Thank you, Director. I will also be brief in my comments. First, I want to recognize Mike DiCaro. Mike has been promoted to the position of Director of Leased Housing and Rental Services, replacing Claribel Shavers. Mike has been with us since 1994 in positions of increasing responsibility, and most recently he was the assistant director within the department. So I want to congratulate Mike, and we look forward to his leadership within the division.
Hi, it's Barry Preston.
Our single family lending is being impacted by high sales prices and increasing interest rates. We expect that to continue into our fiscal year, so we have adjusted our budget projections accordingly. Year over year, for May, we're down approximately $11 in volume. Leslie's team continues to do a great job, you know, offering borrowers appropriate workout strategies to help them keep their homes, which is helping with our delinquency numbers. As our rent relief program is winding down, officially closed out, probably, I believe, the end of September, the Homeowner Assistance Fund has ramped up. We're adding some staff to more rapidly process applications in queue and have deployed over $7 million to date. We're actually way ahead of many other states that haven't even stood up a program yet. So we've had a few technology glitches, as the director knows, around reporting, but the team assures me that they've worked through the data problems, and so I expect our reports to the state to be provided more seamlessly moving forward. Before you today is two actions resulting from the consolidated application round that we launched earlier in the spring. Staff reviewed 52 applications requesting over $200 million in funding. Today you'll be voting on recommendations for the RI rebounds funding and Housing Production Fund. Ann and her staff did an outstanding job working through the multiple applications and financing programs that were available. And of course, she's supported with our asset management and finance group. Well, we've participated in a number of events over the past month, including the Housing Network, RI event where I had the honor to present an award to Chris for her design and implementation of Rent Relief RI. Today, I believe I'll be attending a press event in East Providence with the Governor and Lieutenant Governor celebrating the commitments before you today. And let me introduce and acknowledge Josh Saal, who will join our board shortly. Josh will fill the vacancy created by the retirement of Nick Ritzina. And lastly, we've provided a brief summary of the budget and housing programs that we'll be administering along with our colleagues of Housing and Community Development. Amy is here. If there are specific questions on what's happening with the budget and the status, was here, Director.
Do we have any questions for Carol?
I have one. Kevin.
Yes, Kevin.
This is for Leslie, please. I know with the rising interest rates, you probably have fewer levers to use to help out borrowers who are underwater or delinquent. Is there other tools maybe that we should consider to provide you all some assistance there with your borrowers?
You are correct. The interest rates increasing are definitely impacting our ability to provide affordable payments for borrowers who are exiting COVID forbearance. Typically, you do a term extension and you do a rate reduction to current market rates. Without having that rate reduction, it's really negatively impacting our ability to get payments. Unfortunately, I don't know how creative we can be. The majority of our portfolio is either government insured or is a GSE loan, a Fannie Mae loan. And they're very prescriptive in terms of what the options are that are available to borrowers. They have very, very robust work mitigation tools. But outside of that, we really don't have a lot of flexibility. So we're using the HAP program. We're using HAP, leveraging it with particularly the FHA program that has what is called a partial claim, where the federal government will actually lend the borrower money to pay down arrearage or pay down the principal. So if we leverage that with HAP, it still is pretty impactful. But your assessment is accurate. It is not as impactful as it was just a couple of months ago. We're seeing about a 200 to 250 basis point increase. Unfortunately, that is one of the
rising
interest rates and inflation is really impacting
our business. Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol, thank you for that report.
Sure.
Jim Forrest is here again.
So,
for no man
has gone. Here, folks, please mute your line.
Thank you. Brief interlude. Board action 4. This is Jim Thorson again. That is the firm approval of financing for Copley Chambers in Providence. And with us today to discuss that is Ann Berman, Director of Real Estate Development, who will present on committee action number four. Ann?
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. This request for action is for firm approval of a taxable construction to permanent loan in an amount not to exceed $3 million, of which $2,310,000 will remain as permanent debt for Copley Chambers 1. The developer is Marathon Development, and they have an affiliated construction company known as Marathon Construction. The existing building is located at 206 Broad Street. It's across from Classical High School, and it is currently not much more than a shell. Marathon intends to rehabilitate the building into 26 units for households that range from 30% to 80% of area median income, and they are not using any tax credits for this. The first floor will include some commercial space that will be occupied by supportive service providers for the 30% units. The developer has secured 8 project-based vouchers from the Providence Housing Authority, which helps them leverage the debt that we're talking about today. The proposed loan does include a bridge component for the federal historic equity. And previously, Marathon has secured both ARP funds and BHRI funds. So staff is recommending the attached resolution providing firm approval of a $3 million loan, of which 2.310 will remain as permanent debt.
Great. And thank you. What I'm looking for is a motion to approve committee action number four.
It's Kevin Orth. So moved.
Moved by Kevin Orth. Second?
Second.
Steve McAllister. Thank you. Do we have any questions or discussion? Hearing none. I'm going to ask General Counsel to conduct a voice vote on the motion.
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for Copley Chambers 1 in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorse again. Board action number 5, and that is the firm approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for Bourne Mill 3 in Tiverton. Again, Ann, will you please present on Board Action 5?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This request for action is for firm approval of a reservation of $1,298,500 of low-income housing tax credits and firm approval of a taxable first loan of $4,375,000 for Bourne Mill, which, as you stated, is in Tiverton. Armory Revival Company is the developer. The proposed project will consist of 59 units, mixed income units, in a single newly constructed four-story building, which is adjacent to the existing Bourne Mill, which Rhode Island Housing financed approximately 12 years ago and has 166 units of housing, both market rate and affordable. The proposed building will be constructed adjacent to the mill and will be designed to complement the historic nature of that existing building. The new project will have 47 affordable units for households below 60% of area median income and 12 market rate units that will be capped at 120% of AMI. Since preliminary approval, the developer has also added a solar component, which is going to make the building net zero, which is terrific. And in addition, due to industry-wide construction cost increases, the overall construction budget has actually increased by 30%. To compensate for a portion of the cost increases, the developer has increased their deferred fee by $450,000, and they have also provided a seller loan for a portion of the acquisition cost, which is adding up to over $600,000 worth of what we call skin in the game. The capital stack also includes BHRI, Zeos funding for energy efficiency, and rebounds and housing production fund dollars that will be awarded later today. So this request for approval is for reservation of tax credits of $1,298,500 and a $4,375,000 permanent loan.
Thank you, Ann. Jim Thorson here again. Can I have a motion to approve board action number 5, please?
Kevin Orth, so moved.
Second by Steve.
We have a motion and a second. Can I have any questions or any discussion? Leanne.
This is Leanne. I have a quick question. So this, I saw in this RFA that the construction cost is up by 30% and others around 15. Is there kind of an industry standard? Why are some of these projects experiencing such different increases? And is it due to the properties? Or
I think it's sometimes it's due to the property. In this case, they also identified some local floodplains, which has required sort of additional site work. I think rolled into some of the additional construction costs is also the cost of the solar.
Got it. But they are receiving additional funding for the solar.
Yes,
so
they did receive
a
DO to work. Some of that is offset by that, correct.
Thank you.
I just have a quick comment. Just pointing out that, well, the, you know, we have a big agenda here, but it's across the state here. So this is Tiverton. We have Cumberland coming up, Woonsocket, Providence. So I always like to point that out, the
geographic diversity.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Steve. And I also wanted to note that the gross rents range between $954 and $1,823. Is that right? Based on your memo?
That is correct, based on the memo. Again, some of the units go up to 120% of area median income.
Okay. Thank you. Corinne, can we vote on this motion, please?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for Bourne Mills 3 in Tiverton, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson here again for board action number 6, which is firm approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for the Mill Race District in Woonsocket. Dan?
I'm happy to present this one. It's been a long time coming.
Yes, it has.
So this request for action is for firm approval of the Mill Race District, which is in Woonsocket. We're requesting approval of a reservation of 9% tax credits of $1,117,210, $2 million of home program funds, $1,745,430 of housing trust funds, and $100,000 of capital magnet funds. The developer is the NeighborWorks Blackstone River Valley. So this is a mill conversion that will ultimately provide 70 units and about 24,000 square feet of commercial space. This has a large capital stack, and I will note it includes both federal and state historic tax credit, which is generating equity that's going to, which is about 28% of the total development cost, which just shows you how powerful it is. Of the 70 rental units, 55 are affordable to households at 30, 50, and 60% of area median income. And there are 15 market rate units, but I will note that the market is currently at about 80% of area median income. Since preliminary, initiated some environmental remediation using U.S. EPA funds. This project has had almost $4 million worth of construction cost increases since preliminary, which is slightly less than 14%. Additional costs have been covered through additional LIHTC and federal and state historic equity. They're getting some very generous pricing on this. They will also receive awards of rebound and housing production funds. I will note that Millrace has an AHP award from the Federal Home Loan Bank. So Citizens Bank is going to be the senior construction and senior lender on this project. So with that, we are recommending approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and firm approval of home, housing trust fund, and capital magnet fund.
Thank you, Anne. I would like to request a motion to approve board action number 6. And remember to state your name, please.
Kevin Horowitz, so moved.
Second by Steve McAllister.
We have a first and a second. Can I have any questions or discussion? This one's a good one.
That's making it easy.
Yeah, well, easy to put on the board, but I'm sure that it's easy to put this together. The deal is quite complicated from what I saw, and I think it's great that this is going to be done. So With that, Corinne, can you please conduct a vote and report the results?
Yes, this is Corey Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of a reservation of low-income housing tax credits and financing for the Millrace District in Woonsocket, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, with number seven, which is firm approval of financing for Bear Hill Village in Cumberland. And Ann will present again on board action number seven.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So this RFA is for firm approval of taxable financing in the maximum amount of $22,640,000 for Bear Hill, which is indeed in Cumberland. Providence Realty Investment is the developer. This is an existing property in our portfolio. It's 126 apartments for elderly and disabled households. Does have a HAP contract that was recently renewed for 20 years. The developer has completed some upgrades on the property, but they are seeding the reserves with significant amounts of capital, which we believe adequately addresses any capital needs of the next 15 years. We are going to require that they complete a new capital needs assessment at year 10, just to make sure that we're still on track, and if necessary, annual deposits to the replacement reserve will be adjusted to address capital needs out into the future. So with that, we are recommending approval of a tax permanent loan of $22,640,000 that will be funded through the Federal Financing Bank Reshare Initiative.
Thank you, Ann. It's Jim Thorson requesting a motion to approve board action number seven.
This is Kevin Orth, so moved.
Thank you, Kevin.
Second by Steve McAllister.
Thank you, Steve. Questions and discussion?
Kevin Orth, one comment to add. wanted to recognize staff's willingness to be very flexible and doing what it takes to keep this loan in our portfolio. It's a great property, good borrower. It should be a great loan for us. So thank you very much.
And I agree, as a resident of Cumberland. I appreciate it. I have friends that live in that neighborhood. So, Ann, thank you. Do we have any other questions, comments, or concerns? Hearing none, I'd like to ask Corinne to please conduct a vote on the motion.
Happy to. Commissioners, all those in favor of firm approval of financing for Bear Hill Village in Cumberland, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The ayes appear to have it. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again, introducing board action number eight, which is approval of prepayment for Mount Vernon Temple North Apartments in Woonsocket. And we're going to give Ann another chance to present. Thank you, Ann.
Thanks. So this RFA is an administrative action required under our general rules, and it is for the prepayment of loans associated with Mount Vernon Temple North Apartments. Cathedral Development Group is the sole shareholder of the GP in the development, which consists of 125 apartments. While Cathedral would like to retain this asset, their limited partner has forced a sale in an effort to maximize their returns. And the property has been marketed by a national broker, and as I understand it, they are down to two bidders, and a decision will be made later this week. Considering the volatility in interest rates, the owner has requested that we consent to the prepayment of the existing debt, actually prior to knowing who the new purchaser will be, to satisfy time limitations that they will be imposing on the proposed buyer. Sales proceeds will be used to pay off both the first mortgage, which has a balance of approximately $3 million, as well as principal and accrued interest associated with the junior loans that total about $3.8 million. The development will still be encumbered by our regulatory agreement, which extends until 2045, as well as tax credit restrictions, which expire in 2035. Our approval is conditioned upon approval of the proposed purchaser and property manager, both of whom will also need HUD approval due to the existing HAP contract. So we recommend approval of the prepayment of the existing loans for Temple, for Mount Vernon Temple Associates.
Thank you, Ann. And what I'd like to do is to ask the commissioners for a motion to approve board action number eight.
It's Kevin Orr, so moved.
Thank you, Kevin.
Second by Steve McAllister.
Thank you, Steve. time for questions and comments and concerns. Anyone?
I have a question. Can you explain a little bit about what the process that Rhode Island Housing goes through and also that HUD goes through to approve the new owner and management? How does that work?
Sure. So we have TPA regulations that require sort of a whole host of submissions. Basically, what they look at from HUD's perspective, there are, you know, they're looking at the property manager's financial capacity, experience to manage deeply subsidized housing. You know, they go through a pretty robust review. They look at their financials. There's a process called the 25-30 process, which is previous participation, which I think Kevin will acknowledge is one of the most challenging systems that HUD has. You know, so if you have red flags, if you have, you know, they track low REACT scores and things of that sort. So if, you know, which makes it harder for you to be approved, and you have to kind of show your, you know, that you've figured out how to work through these issues. Same on the financial capacity of it. So
this only happens on the bidder that the seller selects, not when they're down to two that you would be brought in to look at?
So I happen to know who the two potential purchasers are, both of whom have both properties in our that we've financed mm-hmm. and that have either HUD financing or HAP contracts. So they're, you know, they are entertaining bids from experienced developers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Any other questions, comments, concerns? In that case, it's Jim Thorson. Please have, Corinne, can you please conduct a voice vote on this motion?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of the approval of prepayment for Mount Vernon Temple North Apartments in Woonsocket, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion's approved by four affirmative votes. Thanks.
Corinne, thank you. And this brings us to, it's Jim Thorson again, and this brings us to introduce board action number nine, which is the approval of transfer of physical assets for Hillcrest Village Apartments here in Providence. Ann, we're giving you a workout today.
All right. Well, I'll try. This will hopefully be a little more efficient. So the next three actions, number 9, number 10, and number 11, are nearly identical. They are also administrative actions required under our general rules. Preservation of Affordable Housing, commonly referred to as POA, has requested approval to transfer the limited partnership entity in all three of these developments in our portfolio from an affiliate of PNC to a POA affiliate known as Preservation of Affordable Housing, LLC. No new financing is currently anticipated. The transferee will assume all of the existing obligations encumbering each of the developments. The transfers will allow the POA to basically buy out the limited partners now that the initial compliance has ended for all three projects. An affiliate of POA, known as POA Communities LLC, is the property manager, and they will remain for each of these properties. So each of the developments received a REACT score well above 93. We reached out to our asset management team and just made sure that everything was in good order. And POA has provided a list of capital improvements that they've made over the last several years for each of the developments. And we have had some very preliminary conversations with POA about re-syndicating each of these three developments. So we expect that over the next few months, we will start to work on the re-syndication of those. So the first request for action is for approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Hillside Village Apartments.
Okay.
If I may, board action 9, I believe is Hillcrest.
Hillcrest, sorry. Oh, it's sitting right here. And yes, you're right, Hillcrest.
Okay. Thank you, Ann. Jim Thorson here, requesting a motion from the board to approve board action number 9.
So moved. Kevin Orth.
Second.
Thank you, Steve Kelson.
Thank you, Steve. Any discussion or questions?
This is Kevin Orth. I'd like to make a comment. This applies to each of these three items: Hillcrest Village, Hillside Village, and Pocasset Manor. There, POA is an experienced, responsible owner, as you indicated, and with a great track record. All the properties are in good condition. This is an administrative matter that meets all the requirements. So, the credit committee have approved each of these.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm just had a kind of a curiosity question. It's not really not that germane, but is there really something called the PNC Multifamily Capital Institutional Fund 31?
Oh, yes. And that's 15 years old, so they're probably up to 41 by now.
Okay. Corinne, can I please have a voice vote on this motion?
Of course. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of a transfer of physical assets, or TPA, for Hillcrest Village Apartments in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Corinne, that brings us to board action number 10, which is the approval of the transfer of physical assets for Hillside Apartments in Providence. And Ann, once again, will present on this item.
It's pretty much the same as the previous.
In that case, can I have a motion?
Kevin Orth, so moved.
Second, Steve Kastner.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Steve. Jim Thorson here. Corinne, would you please conduct a voice vote on this motion?
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of a transfer of physical assets, or TPA, for Hillside Village Apartments in Providence, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is board action 11, which is approval of the transfer of physical assets for Pocasset Manor Apartments in Providence. Ann?
I think it's exactly the same as the others. It's a well-maintained development, so we recommend approval.
In that case, do we have a motion to approve board action number 11?
So moved. This is Kevin Orth.
Second, Steve McAllister.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Steve. Do we have any discussion or questions? Corinne, would I please conduct a voice vote and report the results?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. All those in favor of approval of a transfer of physical assets, or TPA, for Pocasset Manor Apartments in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson, again, introducing board action number 12, which is an approval of acquisition and revitalization program of funding award to 111 Westminster Street in Providence. And we're going to give you a break. We're going to James present for us on board action number 12. James?
Thank you. This is James Comer. This is a request for action to make an award of acquisition revitalization program funding up to $1 million to High Rock Development for the redevelopment of 111 Westminster Street, commonly known as the Superman Building. The source of these funds is a $15 million set aside from the $65 million affordable housing bond approved by the voters in March of 2021 that was designated for the acquisition and revitalization program, which we call ARP. The purpose of this program is to stabilize neighborhoods and communities by targeting foreclosed and blighted properties, both residential and commercial, and vacant lots in need of redevelopment to create community revitalization. These projects are located throughout the state, but 75% are set aside for urban communities. In November of 2021, Rhode Island Housing issued an RFP for ARP funds from qualified applicants. We received 17 proposals totaling nearly $28 million. Applications were reviewed by development staff in accordance with the program review criteria, and those passing threshold were scored and presented to an external advisory committee, which approved 5 applications. At this body's meeting in March, 4 of those applications were recommended for funding and approved by the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This fifth project, 111 Westminster Street, was awaiting some other capital commitments. Now that the capital stack is fairly complete, staff recommends approval of funding for 111 Westminster Street in an amount of $1 million. These funds will be used to redevelop the former banking hall in the building for, it's a 26,000 square foot commercial space. It'll be used for community purposes, available to community groups for community meetings and public events. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, James. At this time, can I ask for a motion to be made and seconded?
This is Kevin Orth. So moved.
Second, Stephen.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Steve. And now I would ask for any discussions or questions.
Just a quick question. You mentioned it, and just wanted to highlight it, mm-hmm. that this program, the community redevelopment, the requirements on mm-hmm. that, this fits right in there.
Yes, sure. This is, as I said, to renovate the atrium or the former banking hall into a community space. It is. It matches up with the public facility guidelines of the ARP program, so that this will be used as a common space and public facility for the betterment of the community.
So different groups and can rent it out, if you will, or use it
as yes.
a board meeting. Or
exactly the intent, yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
This is Kevin Orth. I'd just like to add to Steve's comment. Two other threshold items are one of that's financially feasible,
mm-hmm.
and staff confirms that that is indeed the case from the numbers that you've been providing.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why we held it back until this meeting to allow some of the other commitments, mostly from the Commerce Corporation, to be approved and make it certainly more financially feasible than it was when we first approved it.
Thank you.
I have a question, not actually specific to the project, but about the program. So can you please remind me how much we approved of the $15 million available?
Sure. With this $1 million approval, we will have approved about $6 million, roughly. So we have about $9 million left.
Okay. And can you talk about the plan for?
Sure. We will be. It is our intention to issue an RFP. I would assume we would do it as part of a consolidated RFP process, probably in September, with other funds that we have available now that the budget's passed and we know the landscape of what the affordable housing funds we have to administer.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments, or concerns? Hearing none, I'd like to ask General Counsel to conduct a vote on this motion.
This is Corey speaking. All those in favor of approval of an acquisition and revitalization program funding award for 111 Westminster Street in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corey. And this brings us to board action number 13, which is approval of the RI Rebounds Production Fund Program, also known as RURPF, funding awards. And we're going to ask you to present again.
Thank you.
Excuse me, this is Leanne. Sorry to interrupt you, Leanne. Due to a conflict of interest, I'm recusing from this vote.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you. So the Rhode Island Rebounds Production Fund, which I'm going to call Rebounds because it's easier, is funded by the state and local fiscal recovery funds, SLRF, if we're talking acronyms here, which was appropriated through the Treasury and through the American Rescue Plan. And it is for the production of affordable housing for households with incomes at or below 80% of area median income. The initial allocation to us was $15 million. In March of 2022, we issued a request for proposals for Rebounds funds, which was part of a consolidated funding round. We received, as Carol said, 52 applications requesting $217 million. So that's a 4-to-1 ratio. Of that $217 million, about $33 million was for requests for Rebounds funding. So as a reminder, there were four threshold criteria. Which were consistent across the bulk of the funding sources. And those include developer capacity, financial feasibility, readiness to proceed, and marketability. So we are recommending 13 projects for a total of $14,750,000. Each of these commitments is subject to our standard underwriting as well as completion of the full capital stack. So collectively, the Rebounds funding will create about 550 new units of housing, of which 168 are going to serve households below 30% of AMI, which was one of the priorities of the program. So I'm going to quickly run through these 13 projects. The first is West House in Middletown, 54 units. We are recommending a $1 million rebounds award. This also has a reservation of 9% tax credits. Summer Street Phase 1, or the 9%, that is part of a twinning deal. There are 87 units in this tranche of the deal. We're recommending $2.5 million of rebounds. Frenchtown, both the 9% and 4% are being recommended for funding. We are making a recommendation of $1 million for the 9% and $757,000 for the 4%. Villages at Manville and Lincoln, 72 units, 54 are affordable for households from 30% to 60% of area median income, and we are recommending an award of $305,670. I will just add that some of these are sort of odd-sized awards. There's twofold. One is the rebounds money is really hard to use with low-income housing tax credits because of the restrictions that Treasury has woven into the regulations. So there are only there's small amounts that basically we can use rebounds funding for without tainting the low-income housing tax credits. And the other reason is we're trying really hard to spread this money around to as many projects as possible. The fifth project is Bourne Mill 3, which we've previously talked about, 59 units, 48 affordable. We are recommending an approval of $1,600,000 of rebounds, and this will allow that project to move to closing and construction commencement, hopefully in the next 90 days. Sutton Place in East Providence, 36 units for households, 30 to 80% of AMI. This project is closed and under construction, and they are receiving an award of $200,000 to help defray costs associated with some unexpected code issues as well as construction cost increases. The seventh is Millrace, which we've also talked about, 70 units, 55 are affordable. We are recommending an approval of $1,419,000. And again, this is the last money into the transaction. Riverside Landing in Coventry is being recommended for $374,750. This will complete the capital stack for a project that's creating 8 units for 50% or lower households. And it is in Coventry. Looking upwards in Jamestown, this one is sort of pretty exciting. It's 12 units, 8 of which will serve individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So this is a really hard population to provide housing for. This development does not support any amortizing debt, and so this rebounds award is for $3,327,265, and it does complete the capital stack. The 10th is Residences at Riverside Square. This is located in East Providence. This will complete the capital stack. 16 units, 30 to 80% of area median income, no low-income housing tax credits. And this rebounds award is $1,012,441. Ivy Place, also in East Providence, this is a home ownership award, a home ownership project, 13 units located right across the street from East Providence Town Hall. 10 of them are for 80% households, and 3 are 100% households, and there are several live-work units in this development. This award is for $540,000. And last but not least, Vernon Mill, which is located in Woonsocket, 60 units, 30 to 80%, and we are recommending a $500,000 rebounds award. So we are recommending these 13 projects, $14,750,000 of rebounds approval.
Thank you, Anne. And at this time, I'd like to ask for a motion to be made and seconded.
So moved. Kevin Hort.
Kevin.
Steve McCallister.
Thank you, Steve. Any discussion or questions, comments, or concerns?
Kevin Hort. I'd just like to make a quick comment or two. It's as you can see, it's a fantastically diverse mix of projects, even getting one down in Jamestown, a really exciting project there. There were a number of projects that did not get funded, and I understand, as we discussed at committee, that was largely due to they just weren't ready to proceed yet. We're hopeful that they'll come back in, maybe in the consolidated funding round, maybe get funded at that time. So I think we've got maybe a pipeline of future projects that we're looking at here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's exciting
as
well.
It is. Yeah.
For a lot of them, it's not a no, it's a not now.
What's that?
It's not a no, it's a not now.
Yes, right, right.
Any other comments or questions? Listed all the different places across the state, Town, East Providence, Coventry. I mean, I think it's a great, you really spread it out, so I think that's good. Corinne, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Corinne, would you please conduct a voice vote on this? Well, actually, should we call a roll? No, voice vote is fine. Voice vote.
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of RI Rebound Production Fund Program Funding Awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With three affirmative votes and one recusal, which is by Commissioner Designee Byrne, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Corinne. It's Jim Thorson again introducing Board Action Number 14, which is the approval of Housing Production Fund Funding Awards. Ann Berman. Please enlighten us.
Thank you. I just want to give a shout out to our staff in development. They've worked really hard to get the reviews of these developments done, and they did it in 5 weeks. So I'm just presenting. They did the bulk of the work. So thank you. This request for action is for approval of the Housing Production Fund Awards, which was established by the state for the planning and production of affordable housing. It's generally funded through the real estate transfer tax, but was initially seeded last year by the legislature with $25 million, $10 million of which has been earmarked for production as part of the previously mentioned consolidated funding round. The threshold and the scoring criteria were identical to the Rebounds program. We are recommending 7 projects for a total of $10 million. Again, each of these is subject to our standard underwriting and completion of the full capital stack. And these awards will serve 74 households below 30% of AMI and a total of 392 units of housing. And some of them are repeats from the Rebounds, some of them are not. So the first one is the 4% tranche of Frenchtown Road, which is in East Greenwich. We are recommending an award of $3,626,381. Among other things, it's also contingent upon the simultaneous closing of the 9% tranche. Bourne Mill 3 in Tiverton. This really is the last piece in the capital stack, $177,285 in housing production fund. The third is the 4% tranche of parcel 9, which is located in the I-195 district. Penrose is the developer. And this is part of a hybrid transaction. And we are recommending an award of $676,574. Again, contingent upon the closing of the 9% tranche of this transaction. The next one is 50 Washington Square, which is in Newport. 50 Washington Square currently provides 93 units of permanent supportive housing. It also includes a homeless shelter, transitional shelter, and office space for several nonprofits. They are in the process of a refinance that actually includes a RAD 2 conversion of their old McKinney-Vento contract, and this HPEF award is for $153,200. The next is Park Home 4, which is also in Newport, fourth phase of the planned five-phase redevelopment, and all of the apartments there will be restricted to households below 60% of area median income, with a good number of them at 30% AMI. They do have project-based vouchers there. So this Housing Production Fund Award is $1,576,250. Burnin Mill, we touched on that previously, 60 units, and we are recommending an award of $2,790,000 of housing production funds. And last but not least, Millrace in Woonsocket, and this is a recommendation for a $1,310,000 housing production fund award, which is the last funding needed to complete the capital stack. So we are recommending these seven projects seeking $10 million of housing production fund approval. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ann. First, we'll ask for a motion and a second.
So moved, Kevin Orth.
Second, Steve Kelsey.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Steve. It's now the time for questions and discussion. Do we have any questions to ask of Ann?
I have one, and feel free to just say this is too long for this already long meeting, but given your experience so far with reviewing applications for the Housing Production Fund and for the Rhode Island Rebound Production Fund, are there program changes that you feel like are necessary for what will hopefully be another tranche approved by the General Assembly in the coming
That months? Is a good question. I'm not sure we've evaluated that yet. I think it's more about how we want to think about the consolidated application and potentially tweak that so that it's a little clearer about how we're going to review these applications. We're using our one-stop application system, and, you know, that's going through some technological revisions. So I think there's always room for improvement. And we're also reaching out to some of our stakeholders and sort of seeking feedback from them as well.
I think if you look at the range of housing that we provided, the income targeting that resulted from the application round, I think it really speaks to the flexibility of these funds. It's really serving a large number of Rhode Islanders and the geographic diversity.
And filling the gap to make the project actually happen.
Yeah.
Understood. Thank you.
This is Kevin Orth. I'd just like to add one comment, and that I think it's due to the sheer volume of funds that we have available and the deals that we're talking about today, which is a situation that we're rarely in.
Never.
This housing production fund is kind of getting lost in a way, but it's a very exciting thing, and that this is funded as a permanent
stream. Yeah.
Permanent stream. So this is something that will hopefully continue on for many years and provide some permanence to and maintain the capacity of developers we have in the state and keep them developing affordable homes in the future. So I'm really excited about the kickoff of this program.
Great. Thank you. At this point, what I'd like to do is to ask General Counsel to conduct a voice vote on the motion. Corinne?
This is Corey speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of Housing Production Fund funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Corinne, thank you. This brings us to action item number 15. Which is approval of the proposed 2023 qualified allocation plan. And once again, Ann Berman, who will be taking a long vacation after, will present on board action number 15.
Thank you very much. So this is for approval of our draft 2023 QAP. You know, it is the guiding document that establishes our priorities and criteria for both allocating as well as monitoring low-income housing tax credits. We do update the plan annually in accordance with requirements of both the Treasury Department and the Rhode Island Administrative Procedures Act. We've discussed this before. We use the scoring in the QAP to incentivize many of our policy goals. And we do seek public input into the plan and see it as a key component of the final document. So to date, we've actually held two meetings with stakeholders to discuss current trends, obviously rising construction costs, market challenges, community needs, scoring categories, point allocations, and some of the sort of the inherent challenges between both urban funding, both urban and non-urban development, which is sort of an annual conversation that we have, you know, because different communities have different needs. So our proposed draft changes to the QAP attempt to address many of the comments from the stakeholders while also being mindful of our fiduciary responsibility as the allocating agency to address both federal requirements as well as sort of ongoing cost containment issues. So I'm not going to go through all the changes, but I wanted to highlight a few of them. First and foremost, there's a lot of changes in the QAP that are more form over substance. We really tried to spend some time stripping out commentary that really, in a way, is almost distracted applicants from focusing on what's required. And we also remind folks that they should make sure that they're seeking guidance from qualified attorneys and accountants while they're putting together these deals, which become increasingly complicated as the years go on. I will add that we are adding a new section in Section 1 regarding the nonprofit right of first refusal, or ROFR, as people like to call it. The new language codifies and preserves the right of first refusal by qualified nonprofits at the close of the compliance period, and this is really a response to some of the bad actors that have sort of moved into the limited partnership syndication space and are forcing sales of, we haven't seen it in Rhode Island, but in a lot of other states, they're sort of forcing sales and putting these properties into the hands of folks who are sort of less interested in the long-term community development needs. I will say that many years ago, we did require the applicants waive their rights to qualified contract, and that's pretty much tempered most of that activity. But this is just sort of one more tool to ensure nonprofit control where it's applicable. I will also note that from a process perspective, we are proposing the elimination of in-person presentation of projects by applicants. Staff has determined, and I think there are some applicants who would agree, that it really doesn't provide a lot of additional information beyond what is provided in the application, and we think that eliminating this will help reduce the timeline it takes us to get through our approvals by 3 to 4 weeks. We will update our procedures and allow for a very intentional and transparent written outreach and make sure that everybody is addressed in the same fair manner. One of the conversations we had at Credit Committee, we originally have recommended the elimination of an absolute total development cap, and this was really just a response to the kind of volatile construction market. We note that the financial leveraging section of the QAP is 43% of the overall scoring, so we think that that drives a lot of cost containment inherently. Based on feedback from the credit committee, we're going to relook at that and see if perhaps it might make more sense to increase the cap, but have a cap. So this QAP gets posted for public comment. We will accept comments for the next probably 35 days or so, and we will have a public meeting at the conclusion of that, so we do have some time to respond to everybody's comments.
Sure.
The public meeting actually is scheduled to be a video conference.
Thank you.
Which actually has really increased the number of participants.
Mm-hmm.
The next change I wanted to highlight was the modification of points that are awarded for high-performing schools, and we are considering changing that to high school graduation rates. Primarily, it's a metric that's much easier to review and sort of understand, and thanks to the Rhode Island Kids Count fact book, it's published and there's a lot of detail in their fact book. So it's very easy. We can provide a link and folks can sort of see where they fall. We are also recommending modification of points related to mixed income units, and really this is a response to some of our nonprofits who for a variety of reasons are less likely to do mixed income, and they think there's sort of an inherent disparity for for-profits who are willing to take on the risk associated with mixed income. We still think that mixed income is an important sort of public policy goal, but we are recommending some modification of points around that. We're also recommending modification of points for broadband to reflect the Affordable Connectivity Program, which was included in the federal infrastructure bill. If you recall, last year we spent a lot of time talking about a broadband and provided points for the provision of free broadband, but under the infrastructure bill, households are required to actually pay at least $9.99 a month for their internet, and in return, then there's this $30 reimbursement that comes through from the broadband provider. So we're modifying points to sort of reflect the changes in the program and the law. Finally, you know, again, some more administrative. We're deleting multiple sections that are really more common than substantive. So, as I mentioned, the plan will be published. There'll be a 30-day comment period. We'll have a public meeting. We do encourage written comments as well. I'm happy to answer questions. If all goes according to plan, we will be back before you in August seeking firm approval of the QAP.
Very good. Thank you, Anne. And at this time, I'd like to ask for a motion to be made and seconded.
So moved. Kevin Hort.
Thank you, Kevin.
Second, Steve McCallister.
Thank you, Steve. Now it's time for discussion and questions. We have discussion and questions for Anne.
This is Kevin Orth.
Thank you, Kevin.
I wanted to thank Anne and the staff. There's a lot of thought that goes into this each year. We had a pretty healthy discussion, I think, in the credit committee about that. So thank you for listening to that, and thank you for the sounds like we've gotten some very good feedback from the developer community, so great reach out there to them. two other comments I'd like to make is in looking back at the projects that were most recently funded, which were fantastic, I think, one of the components of those was a strong mixed income component, I think. So I would just ask that we take a look at that, knowing that it is has high value from a public policy standpoint, but ensuring that, say, we're not subsidizing these kind of market units or non-affordable units with funds for affordable housing. So maybe we look at potentially having a cap on the amount of credits per affordable unit, and maybe even look at a cap on the amount of soft dollars per affordable unit. Again, just to make sure that we're getting enough dollars going into affordable units. And maybe we might want to also look at some points maybe for encouraging a higher percentage or level of affordability in our projects, whether that's at 30%, 50%, or 60% AMI. Again, I love the mixed income, but just, you know, want to make sure that our resources are going to providing the affordable units. Oh, I'm sorry, one other thing.
That's fine, Kevin.
And I see that we have Brenda in the audience here. Maybe she can help us out. A lot of the units funded were studios, one bedrooms, and some two bedrooms this past year, which I think is what we need most of, small units in this state, as opposed to the three and four bedrooms. So just wanted to maybe, and I see that looking at the consolidated plan, I think that backs it up, but maybe Brenda, you could speak to that.
That's certainly what the data suggests, and while population in Rhode Island has not grown significantly, household size has shrunk, and so the demand for smaller units has continued to increase. So I think it's the right direction. That does not mean that we have completely stopped other developments too, because there's still a demand, but less of it for a higher number of
units. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, and thanks to staff for providing that black line. Do we have any other questions?
I have a question, either for Kevin or for Anne. Could you give a little bit more of a recap of the discussion at the credit committee on the question of eliminating or increasing the TDC cap?
Sure, I'll take that. I think it was largely driven by me and credit committee. Liz was present as well, involved in the discussion. But I think that this we want to keep in national best practices, and this is one of the best practices of NCSHJ is to have total cost development cap, either on a per square foot or per unit basis. I think preferably per unit basis, which is what we've done. I think it just ensures that, well, hopefully, it encourages that we will use the money as efficiently as possible. Because even though we might, for instance, have a very expensive project that otherwise checks all the boxes that we want to see, mm-hmm. but we want to hopefully encourage it to check as many boxes as possible and deliver as many units as possible. It's really a scarcity of resources issue, I think.
I'm supportive of keeping it. That's why I was curious about how the conversation went. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well,
thank you.
All right, Jim Thorson here again, asking Corinne to conduct a voice vote on the motion, please.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, all those in favor of the approval of the proposed 2023 Qualified Allocation Plan, or QAP, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved with 4 affirmative votes.
All right, thank you. And that brings us to board action item number 16, which is the approval of the FY 2022 Community Development Program Funding Awards. And we're going to give Anne a little bit of a breather here. James.
Thank you. This is James Comer. This request is for approval of grant funding under the FY 22 Community Development Program. It's an annual grant program that we operate. This year, there is $500,000 available in funding. Just as a reminder, this program provides funding for the following priority areas: programs and projects that promote housing stability and increased economic self-sufficiency, such as financial literacy, homeownership education, workforce development, support for resident service coordinators to address what we've noted is an increased need for tenant stability due to COVID-19-related stresses and challenges, and funds to sustain and expand innovative programming created or identified as a response to the pandemic. Programs must support residents living in Rhode Island housing finance developments, and this year we are awarding these programs for a 3-year term to allow for increased sustainability and allow us to measure outcomes a little bit better over a longer period of time. We issued an RFP in March, received 27 proposals, requesting a total of $3.7 million in funding. Committee consisting of staff from executive, home ownership, development, and leased housing and rental services divisions reviewed these proposals and are recommending 4 awards. The first is for NeighborWorks Blackstone River Valley for $125,000. This will support their launch of a comprehensive asset building and resident services initiative across 8 developments in northern Rhode Island, serving a total of 850 residents. This will provide residents access to resources and tools needed to address COVID-19-related stresses and challenges and support their overall resident wellness and success. The second is for Open Doors, which is located in Providence, in the amount of $75,000. This will support an on-site peer recovery coach and clinical therapy for the 19 tenants living in permanent supportive housing at Open Doors. The next is for Phoenix Property Management in the amount of $150,000 to support resident service coordinator to serve the Apple Creek Apartments and Sandy Wood Farms developments. There are family developments in Tiverton serving 188 residents in total. And lastly, $150,000 to Women's Development Corporation and their management arm, Housing Opportunities Corporation, to support a resident services coordinator for their 9 family developments in Providence, Richmond, and Warwick.
Thank you, James. It's Jim Thorson again. And at this time, I'd like to request a motion to approve board action number 16.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Leanne.
Second, this is Steve
Costa. Thank you, Steve. Time for questions and discussion for James. Do we have any questions, comments, or concerns? Oh, come on. We gave Anne quite a workout.
I've got the next 3 or 4. You'll get your chance. Yeah.
That's not fair. In that case, what I'd like to do is ask Corinne to conduct a voice vote on the motion.
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of the fiscal year 2022 Community Development Program funding awards as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. For the record, we have 4 affirmative votes, and the motion is approved.
Thank you, Corinne. That brings us to board action number 17, approval of engagement of a consultant for Rent Relief RI Partners Capacity Building. And do we have
James
Comer will be taking this for us. James?
Thank you. This is James Comer. This request for action seeks authorization to enter into a contract with BDO FMA, a part of BDO USA LLP. I have more letters if you need them. To provide financial capacity building services to Rent Relief's nonprofit partners. This is in order to help these partners build financial and grant management knowledge and skills and develop fiscal infrastructure and practices necessary for ongoing financial health. Rhode Island Housing, over the course of the Rent Relief Program, contracted with 23 community partners, and those partners would be eligible to access this support. An RFP was issued in April 2022 seeking proposals from qualified consultants. This was the only proposal received. A review committee consisting of Rhode Island Housing staff reviewed this proposal in accordance with the RFP and determined that BDO FMA was qualified to carry out these capacity building activities. They have past experience providing these services to similar organizations, and they were very specific in their response to the proposed scope of work and how they would conduct it. They have a team of 96 dispersed across the country, with concentrations of staff and clients in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, here in New England, and Washington, D.C., and exclusively serve nonprofit and grant-making organizations to empower nonprofit leaders with the information and capacity needed to improve their fiscal operations, manage their resources, and make them able to provide stable long-term impact in the areas in which they work. This engagement is expected to begin in July and conclude by September of 2022.
Okay, thank you, James. Comments, questions, concerns? I have a question.
Sure.
James, and presumably in reading through the material, this will enable these partners to be more financially savvy, and the question relates to whether that includes providing reporting.
Yes, they would. Exactly right. What we hope to do with this, our experience with these partners is they're great mission-driven organizations, they're great community organizations, and you know, with a lot of nonprofits, sort of building the infrastructure to do exactly what you're saying, to be able to talk about the outcomes that they're achieving, to report on those, and certainly the financial health of the organizations is a critical piece of that. So there will be some they will build the ability to do all of those functions, hopefully, for those who want to access this. This opportunity.
Thank you, Chance. I think it went out of order here. I was supposed to ask for the motion. So I'm going to ask for a motion.
I make a motion.
Leanne, thank you.
Second, Steve Nelson.
Thank you, Steve. And Corinne, well, actually, any other questions before I call the motion?
Quick question.
Yes.
This is Kevin Orth. So presumably this will help them in other relief efforts? As
yes.
Yes. They'll be able to bid on state contracts, other municipal contracts to work in partnership with other agencies.
Oh. Great. Corinne?
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of the approval of the engagement of a consultant, namely BDO FMA, for Rent Relief RI Partners Capacity Building, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. With 4 affirmative votes, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Corinne. This brings us to board action number 18, which is approval of Healthy Housing, Healthy Communities funding. And Jessica.
It's actually going to be me again. I'm sorry to repeat.
Okay, James.
So this request for action is James Comer. This request for action is for an approval of an allocation of funds in the amount of $1 million for the purpose of funding the Healthy Housing, Healthy Communities. I'm going to call it H3C from here on in. This requested funding will leverage an investment by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Rhode Island in the amount of $4 million that they've provided to the Rhode Island branch of the Local Initiative Support Corporation, LISC. This BCBSRI award is to fund projects supporting innovative financing to produce and preserve housing, provide down payment assistance, and invest in community facilities to support some of our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders. As part of this initiative, LISC Rhode Island reached out to a number of community partners, including the Rhode Island Foundation and Rhode Island Housing, to request funds to supplement this award with increased funding to broaden its impact. Senior staff at Rhode Island Housing have been working to identify a potential avenue of support that aligns with our mission and furthers our goal of providing high-quality, affordable housing for all Rhode Islanders. Concurrent with this, Rhode Island Housing was invited to respond to the H3C request for proposals for grant funding and technical assistance to promote the development of partnerships with health-related organizations or systems. We are eligible to apply for this due to our membership in the National Council of State Housing Finance Agencies. On May 4th, NCSHA notified Rhode Island Housing that we had a successful proposal, including $150,000 award and technical assistance for planning to identify partnerships and other innovative approaches to align housing and healthcare. Using these funds and the award contemplated in this action, Rhode Island Housing will partner with LISC and five of the health equity zones located throughout the state to build the HESA's capacity to address housing issues impacting the health of their communities. This will include, but is not limited to, the identification and development of affordable housing for members of the health community, the HES communities, and help them work with their client populations, which encompass extremely low-income individuals and families, those experiencing or at risk of homelessness, those experiencing mental health or substance use issues, and those with developmental, intellectual, or physical disabilities. Committee consisting of the executive director, deputy executive director, and staff will lead the work of this initiative and work with LISC Rhode Island and each participating HES to ensure these funds are being used to create greater housing opportunities for those most in need and develop programs that are intended to meet the expanding housing needs of Rhode Islanders.
Thank you, James. At this time, what I'd like to do is to request a motion to approve board action number 18.
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Leanne. Do I have a second?
Second, Steve Kossler.
Thank you, Steve. Questions, comments, concerns for James?
This is Leanne. I'm really excited about this. I think this is very cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome way to leverage great evidence of Rhode Island Housing being a community partner and responding to the work of other agencies that are doing the great work on the street. So,
thank you.
I agree. Other questions, comments? None? Hearing none, what I'd like to do is to ask for a voice vote on the motion. Corinne?
This is Corinne speaking. All those in favor of approval of Healthy Housing, Healthy Communities funding as presented, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson here again, and I want to let the board members know that in addition to being on the board of Rhode Island Housing, you are also members of the Public Housing Authority that administers Section 8 rental subsidies on behalf of us. And so I need a motion at this time to recess the meeting of Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners and convene the Section 8 committee.
With Leanne, I make a motion to recess.
Thank you, Leanne. Do I have a second?
Second.
Steve, thank you. Okay, so Corinne.
Can you vote on the motion?
Okay. Yeah.
Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of recessing the meeting of the RA Housing Board of Commissioners and convening the Section 8 committee, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion's approved by unanimous.
Thank you, Corinne. So this brings us to board action number 19, which is the approval of Public Housing Authority annual plan. James, will you please walk us through this, please?
Sure. This is James Comer. As the commissioner mentioned, Rhode Island Housing does function as a public housing authority with respect to the administration of tenant-based vouchers under the Housing Choice Voucher Program. In accordance with HUD regulations, specifically Title V of the Quality Housing and Work Responsibility Act of 1998, every year we must adopt a streamlined annual PHA plan for this program to establish goals and objectives that meet the housing needs of the corporation's jurisdiction. This is called the annual plan. It includes Rhode Island Housing strategies for expanding the supply of assisted housing, promoting family self-sufficiency, and ensuring equal opportunity in housing. This must be approved by the board and then forwarded to HUD for approval. In accordance with the requirements of the Act, the annual plan was circulated to a resident advisory board for review, and there was also a 45-day public comment period advertised, culminating in a public hearing on May 23, 2022. One comment regarding community harmony was received from a member of the resident advisory board. No other comments were received from the public. This is an annual exercise. There are no material changes to the plan from last year, and Rhode Island Housing's government relations and policy staff has reviewed the annual plan to ensure that it's consistent with the state's consolidated plan.
Thank you, James. At this time, what I'd like is a motion to be made and seconded. Do I have a motion?
Does Leanne make a motion to?
Thank you, Leanne. Do I have a second?
Second. Steve,
thank you. Now it's time for any discussion and questions for James. Do we have any comments, questions, concerns?
I have a question, maybe not germane to this, but could you speak to the utilization rate of Section 8 vouchers program and maybe what we might be doing to boost that up?
Sure. I don't have the exact number in front of me, Kevin, but I will tell you we have a very high utilization rate. The challenges we have are, occasionally having some folks being able to find units necessarily in the communities that they're looking. We do have a housing navigator that can assist with some of that, and we do provide support to folks as they go out. We actually just had a landlord event last week at the Crown Plaza where we honored our existing participants in the HVP program and, hopefully brought some new landlords into the fold who'd be interested in having HVP residents going forward. It was a really successful event, and we had a very good turnout, so we're hopeful that that's going to continue the success of the program.
Right.
One thing I would add is, we have a few tools in our toolkit, right? So we're one of the larger providers of rental under the continuum of care. In addition to the vouchers, we also deploy the 811 vouchers, and I think we're 100% subscribed on our 811 vouchers now, so we will be looking at applying for additional BA when that becomes available. Also, the Road Home program, which was funded by Rhode Island Housing, still exists in some developments across the state, and we now have the additional money under the Housing Production Fund to be able to further provide funding for rent assistance. So we do have a number of tools. If jurisdictional issues exist, in our areas are very high cost, but we manage to get people leased up in places around the state.
Good. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, James. And at this time, I'd like to ask Bryn to conduct a voice vote on the motion, please.
This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, all those in favor of the approval of the Public Housing Authority, or PHA, annual plan, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. For the record, the motion is approved with 4 affirmative votes. Thank you.
Thank you, Corinne. Jim Thorson here again, requesting a motion to adjourn the Section 8 committee meeting and reconvene the RI Housing Board of Commissioners meeting. And
I make the motion to adjourn.
Leanne?
Second.
Thank you, Steve. Second. Corinne, once again, going to ask you to conduct a voice vote on this motion.
Certainly. All those in favor of adjourning the Section 8 committee and reconvening the RA Housing Board of Commissioners, please say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you, Corinne. This is Jim Thorson again, and there being no further business, I'd like to request a motion to adjourn.
Does Leanne make a motion to adjourn?
Leanne, do I have a second?
Second. This is Steve.
Thank you, Steve. And Corinne, one more time, can you conduct a voice vote on the motion and state the time for the record?
Certainly. Commissioners, all those in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you all.
And the time?
Thank you.
10:55.
Thank you all. We're now adjourned.